What's up, everyone? I hope you're all doing well. It's been a while since I put a video out there. I've been busy. But I think it's time to put some information out there with the goal of trying to help people properly assess the current state of the data relating to COVID-19 so you can do your best to form an educated opinion. And my goal is to be completely unbiased and present this information to you without some sort of underlying narrative. And this is a big problem that I think we've all seen, if we're being honest, is in media, in public health, in government, in both from anti-vaxxers and anti-maskers to people who are just all in on scientism. Everyone is sharing information in a way that supports the way they already feel about the situation and the way they felt about it from the very beginning. And people are becoming overcommitted to their positions in a way where it is going to hurt people. So I'm certainly not an expert in this area, but I can look at data and I can look at studies and I can look at research and I can present it in a way where it's probably a little bit easier for the average person to decide where they're at. And again, these things can always change. This is just the state of the data right now. So the thing that kicked this off for me is these stats at the top, which is the Canada-wide reporting of COVID-19 cases, because you're gonna see tons of people share this and say, if you look on the left-hand graph there, 90% of all COVID cases in Canada are happening in the unvaccinated. And this is a pandemic of the unvaccinated. And you've likely heard that term many times by now. And that could be true. But this data here is misleading, and I'll tell you why. Because they say 90% of cases starting in December when the vaccine campaign first started. And if you look at that time, very few people were vaccinated. And it wasn't until around June of 2021 that we had a significant peak in vaccination. Now, the reason why this is important is because when you're putting together statistics like this, you have to have your control group. So you can't retroactively, when no one was vaccinated or 5% of the population was vaccinated or 10% of the population was vaccinated, you can't go back to those times and include them in the statistics and think you have a real picture of unvaccinated versus vaccinated and what the results are for cases and hospitalizations and deaths. And I'll show this to you here, because if you look at the Ontario numbers, and if you look at 7-day averages, the average over 6 weeks, when vaccinations have been at the peak and we're getting up to, you know, 75-80% of the population with their two vaccinations, you see a little bit of a different story. So when you look at the averages where we actually have a good comparison of vaccinated versus unvaccinated, you'll see that partially vaccinated and fully vaccinated individuals are making up for about 34% of the cases, which is clearly less than the unvaccinated, but it's a more accurate, genuine statistic. And 34% is a very significant number for people to be carrying if we're saying, hey, if you get the vaccine, you're gonna prevent the spread. It doesn't seem like, at least for right now, that is true. The other thing I wanna mention here is that 34% is probably low, because if we're saying this vaccine is very effective at reducing symptoms, disease severity, death, then you're going to have less vaccinated people who carry the disease, going to the doctor's office, going to the hospital, being tested, because the vaccine has been so effective at reducing symptoms and adverse reactions to the disease. You're going to have many more vaccinated carriers who have no idea that they're even sick. So I'm going to assume, and I think it's plausible to assume, that that number's higher than 34%. By how much, who really knows? And a critic might say, you've included partially vaccinated people in that 34%. And that's true, and I'll tell you why. First of all, for whatever reason, no one's really had a good explanation for this yet, but fully vaccinated people are still making up much more of the carrying vaccine population than partially vaccinated. But if you look at the research, the first shot gives the vast majority of the immune response. The second shot, while still giving a significant response, is more of a top-up. So 70 to 75% of the protection comes in the first vaccination. So the partially vaccinated people actually have quite a strong response and a strong amount of protection. The fully vaccinated get a little bit of a bump. And then if you also think about the vaccinations being spread out by, you know, if it's 30 days, 45 days between vaccinations, that person who gets the second vaccination is naturally, you know, if you just do the math, is going to have a longer span of protection. But I think 34% of all cases coming from vaccinated and partially vaccinated people is a conservative estimate. Now, when you look at hospitalizations in ICU and in hospital, but not in the shape that would push you into ICU, you see that it's much less partially vaccinated and fully vaccinated people. I think the data is very clear that the vaccination gives a strong amount of protection of disease severity and death. And I don't know how many people are out there who are going to debate that. I think that data, if you assume the data is true, which I think we all should do our best to give the data the benefit of the doubt, then the effectiveness at reducing disease severity and death is very, very strong. So people who are in vulnerable populations, people, you know, the elderly, the metabolically ill, certainly should get the vaccination, in my opinion. I'm sure there's people who will disagree with that, but I think anyone who is concerned, anyone who is vulnerable, anybody who is more likely to have a worse reaction to the disease itself should get a vaccination, because that I think that data is pretty straightforward. What I don't understand is all the hysteria that leads to people thinking we need something like a vaccine passport. And just to back up for a second here, if we're saying conservatively over one third of spread is coming from vaccinated people, in combination with the vaccine is very effective at protecting the individuals who take the vaccine, what is the point of a vaccine passport? If we're saying if you get the vaccine, you can still spread the disease, but you're very well protected from the disease, what does a vaccination passport do? Can someone please tell me that? Because I don't understand. And if you have this stance of, oh, well, unvaccinated people are more likely to get sick, and that's a burden on our healthcare system, and that's a financial issue. Well, we still sell alcohol, we still sell cigarettes, we still sell foods that allow people, we have an obesity rate of 30%, 70% of our population is overweight. We're not punishing any of those people or making you have a diet passport or a zero alcohol consumption passport. We're not drug testing people before they go into restaurants or bars or gyms or wherever. So you can't really use that argument saying, well, it's about the burden financially or otherwise on the population at large. That argument does not stand up. You're allowed to drive a car, okay? You know how many people die in car accidents? You don't think that that's a burden on society? Anyways, I don't want to go on a tangent here. But if the vaccination is very protective, which it appears to be, and not so great at controlling spread, which it appears to be, again, this can change, but this is what the data suggests right now, then what is the justification for a vaccine passport? I don't understand. And then also the hysteria, both in the population at large and now talking about kids, because we're trying to ramp up to get approval for younger and younger populations. So you can see the narrative, especially with going back to school, protect our kids, protect our kids. Well, number one, look at our wave rate now compared to the first three, particularly the second and the third wave here in Canada. This is not anywhere near what we have experienced in the past two waves, but we're pretending like this peak is off the chart. This appears to be pretty well controlled to me if you compare it to the two spikes in the past. So regardless of the vaccination status of the entire population, clearly, whatever we're doing, whatever the state of the pandemic is in this country, is getting much, 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 much better, yet we're getting more and more and more and more restrictive. Does not make sense. How does that add up? Can someone please tell me? And when we're talking about we have to protect our kids are going back to school, we need to protect our kids. Well, let me remind you that in Canada and under 19, the vast majority of cases are coming from young people, yet the negative outcomes are still not happening in young people. Of course, it's a tragedy when any person dies, excuse me. But if you look at 282,000, closer to 283,000 confirmed cases of COVID in Canada in individuals under the age of 19 and 15 deaths. Now, what is it that makes you think this population needs to be protected? What we're making it out like kids are vulnerable. Children are the most resilient population without question to this disease, both in severity, death, all negative outcomes. Why are we pretending like they're the ones that need to be protected? They are not. What we're doing, if you look at this, this is what we're actually doing, whether you agree or not. This is the systemic logic of what is happening right now. We are punishing kids to protect the most sick and elderly people in the country. And I'm not gonna say that that's wrong. I don't agree with it. I think it's ridiculous to have mandates in place that can seriously harm the development of young children in order to protect people who are in the 80 plus category, who have lived a full life, who, let's be honest, are in the last stages of life. Let's potentially fuck up all of our kids so that we can protect the people who have the least amount of cases but the greatest amount of deaths and therefore the greatest disease severity outcome. You know what I'm getting at here? Makes no sense to me. So what's this narrative about we have to protect our kids? Our kids require no protection from us as far as this goes. You know what you need to do with your kids? You need to feed them better food. You need to take them outside and play with them rather than sit them in front of the TV for 3 hours every single day. You need to engage with them, read to them rather than give them the iPad to babysit for you. If you care about kids, that's what you do. Because kids are clearly not vulnerable to this disease, even with the rise of the Delta variant. It's not that I'm saying that this isn't something that people should keep an eye on. Clearly it is. But the data has not changed. With the rise of the Delta variant, the data has not changed. You can argue that there's greater spread, which there seems to be, not so much in Canada right now, but in other places where the Delta variant came beforehand. But the risk of death in young people is no greater. So let's stop pretending that this is some sort of crisis. Now, the last part here is there's been lots of interesting studies that have come out as for naturally acquired immunity. And one that came out yesterday that shows a very, very strong response. And I posted it on Instagram. I won't go through these right now. You can find these all over the place. I would suggest that you don't go to quack anti-vaccine sites to find them, because you might find a less credible narrative on that information. But it seems pretty clear that we should at least be interested in investigating naturally acquired immunity in place of vaccines, especially with the 20% of the population who is digging their heels in and not going to budge on the vaccine. Why would you not give those people an opportunity to have fast, effective, cheap testing to see if they have acquired natural immunity to the virus, and then give them some sort of passport or card if this is something we are going to enforce indefinitely, and that's just the way it's gonna be. If our concern is people being protected so we can protect others, which itself is ridiculous, and I've already said why I feel that way. But if that's our concern, why are we not testing people for prior infection and testing their antibody level in response to that? Because it seems like naturally acquired infection gives greater immunity for a longer period of time than the vaccine, which they're already talking about booster shots for. Because the waning immunity of the vaccine already seems to be clear. Now, I'm not saying that anybody should forgo the vaccine and try and seek out getting sick, especially if you think about the sick and the elderly and the vulnerable. Probably not a good option. All of those people should probably get the vaccine, or should definitely get the vaccine. But in young, healthy populations, why is naturally acquired immunity not an option? Why are we not testing for this? Here's something out of Israel National News. More than 7,700 new cases of the virus have been detected during the most recent wave starting in May, but just 72 of the confirmed cases were reported in people who were known to have been infected previously. That is less than 1% of the new cases. Roughly 40% of new cases, or more than 3,000 patients, involved people who had been infected despite being vaccinated. Like, this data is pretty clear and it's piling up, but people don't want to recognize that the vaccines may be not as effective for spread as we were hoping, but naturally acquired immunity is very strong. Clearly greater than that of the vaccination. Why are we not saying people who are vulnerable, people who are elderly, people who are sick, people who are metabolically ill, you don't want to naturally acquire this disease. You want to get a vaccination. But people who feel like they're young and they're healthy and for whatever reason, religious or otherwise, are against vaccination, take this test and see what your antibody strength is, see what your previous exposure is, and if it's at a certain level, that is acceptable in place of the vaccine. If it's just about making sure our society at large is as resilient as possible, why is that not an option? These are questions that I think people should ask. So I think that about covers it. Everyone's got their idea of what the data means and digging their heels in on the thing that they've already committed themselves to, the position they've already committed themselves to. But if the goal is to have the best outcome possible for our society, and we get there in a multifaceted way, like you're gonna have people for whatever reason are not going to take the vaccination, and if you think about the naturally acquired infectious data, this should be an option for those people. Like, wouldn't you rather just know, oh, Susie didn't get a vaccine, but she has this test that shows her naturally acquired immunity, and it's as strong, if not stronger, than from the vaccination. Cool, now I know that, and I don't have to worry about Susie anymore if I'm someone who's vaccinated and concerned about being around other people. Why is this cheap, rapid, effective testing not available to people where you don't have to jump through hoops and put in an application and pay money for it? Because that's the system right now. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So for anyone who's seen all this stuff, especially just from news media outlets or people are just straight anti-vax, anti-mask, or people who are just straight scientism who cannot even consider the idea that the vaccine was not the way, those two groups of people are very unhelpful. And you know, while I can't completely control my own biases, because I'm someone who's about taking control of your health first and using medicine on top of that fundamental layer of protection you've created within yourself, I can't remove that bias. I do my best to go through this data without having an agenda, and that's what I hope I've been able to present to you today.